I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. While covering the Hawaii International Film Festival on Oahu a few weeks ago, we were enthralled to view a plethora of films and meet and visit with an array of producers, scriptwriters, directors, and performers. It was a candy store experience to have the honor and pleasure to visit and meet such an array of captivating people. A most memorable film premiere was the movie Fair. We met up with actress, producer, Elizabeth Rain following the premiere of her film at the Consolidated Theaters over in Kohala. Miss Rain's performance as Snow White was stellar and hilarious, and we still laugh every time we recall her film. The Fair storyline is centered around a birthday party. Her friend had made it big and hosted a poolside party with Snow White as the special guest. Sadly, spoiled and indulged kids were severely disgruntled when they discovered that Snow White was their only poolside performer. They had been counting on the Ice Princess as their main stage performance, and they brutally protested. To save the day, Snow White had to do a 9/11 call to her Ice Princess cohort and beg her to come to the party to save the day. Elizabeth?
My name's Elizabeth Rian. I'm from Manoa Valley on Oahu.
So you're the star of a movie we just saw.
Yeah.
Was that your vision?
Yes, that was exactly my vision. I used to play Disney princesses at kids' birthday party, and I had the misfortune of showing up to the very nice home of a former high school nemesis of mine who was married and successful and rich and had children and all the things that women are supposed to, quote unquote, have when they're in their 30s. And I had none of these things, and I felt like a complete idiot, and I wanted to make a movie about it.
And you did a masterful job. The little evil kids.
Thank you. I love children. Disclaimer, yeah. I love children.
Understood.
But there were 10 of them on set, and they nailed it.
They really did. And I love your Snow Princess girlfriend.
Oh, thank you, Elsa.
Yeah, came up to save the day.
Yeah.
So what's next for you?
So next, I am making a period piece short film set in 1959 during Hawaii's statehood. Nice. About a queer woman who loved a Hawaiian woman. It's based on a true story about a member of my family.
So it was oral history you learned about?
Yeah, through my grandmother, through my aunties, through my mother. And I'm making her story. I'm really excited about it.
That's really cool. Rolling back in your life, how did you get interested in filmmaking?
I started doing theater when I was a kid, and I've always loved telling stories, being funny, connecting with other people. My sister was my biggest audience. My grandmother would read the Bible to us, and I would act out the scenes for my sister to entertain her. And then I started making my own movies, and it was just a blast, and I want to do it for the rest of my life.
That's so cool. Probably the toughest part is funding, right?
Always. Yeah. Always. Yeah.
You pulled it off.
I did. Yeah. I did pull it off. With the help of Hawaii Women in Film, I was able to secure a grant. I've actually secured a grant for my next film as well from Pacific Islanders in Communication. I will be hiring predominantly Asian Pacific Islanders to work on my cast and crew. Mm-hmm. And I will be hiring mentors and mentees as well to bring them up with me.
That's really cool. Then a quick second on where we are right now, the showing that just concluded. The Wahine, tell us about that. Series.
Yeah, the Real Wahine of Hawaii. So none of this would have been possible without Vera Zambonelli, who started Wahine in Film, a program by, for, and about women in film. We're here at Kahala Consolidated watching all of our films.
How cool. Yeah. How does somebody learn more about you and your world? Where do we go?
I suppose you could go on Instagram, where my film is, Fair the Film, or my own Instagram, at Bipsy Rian. That's BipsyRian. And I'm so excited to be here, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Elizabeth. That was great.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you. Yay! Nice to meet you.
The film Kaihalia, Sea of Memory, a Made in Hawaii short, was directed by Angelique Axelrod. Angelique says, through incorporating digital video with 8mm and intentionally damaged 16mm footage, direct film animation, and embodied movement, Kaihalia offers a bridge and a continuum of the past into the future and the future into the past.
My name is Ted McKinney. We're from Arinda, California. here to enjoy this wonderful HIF gala experience on behalf of our daughter.
That's really great. What do you do in Orinda?
Recently retired from the software business.
On your name again?
Ted McKinney.
And you're enjoying your time here in Waikiki?
I am very
Waikiki.
Much enjoying. Yes, very much so. Although it seems weird to be wearing a tux in Hawaii, but here I am. Look good, right?
Yeah, you do.
All right. you're telling me that.
You fooled everybody. Well, thanks again.
Of course, of course.
What's the name of the movie?
Kai Halea, Sea of Memories, Trisha Axelrod.
It was your idea, your story?
Well, Angelique is my daughter, and she's the filmmaker, and she actually decided to research our family history. And, like, no one knew a lot about my tutu, who is her great tutu. So she orchestrated all these people to find, and when we went to these old churches to see if anybody remembered her, and it was really great.
Did you use any archival pictures?
We actually have a big book that one of our cousins have researched, so that was part of it, but not specific to our family, to like our whole entire family, because it's a huge extended family.
How far back did you trace your family?
So they're still tracing it back, but all of our family's from Maui, and then part of it, well, Paia is like...
Going back to Kamehameha Day?
Kamehameha will be like part of McKenna on that side, yeah. Which is the infamous place where like the crazy La Perouse, like in that area. So yeah, it is interesting.
You guys submitted the film to the film festival?
Yes. We submitted it. Well, Angelique did all the work. We actually went to Australia for a live performance at their...
Live performance, how?
So she also, she's into digital film, so we had it up in like three different screens, and then we did a live performance. We danced like in the middle of while it was screening on three different screens, so it was really cool. Yeah, it was very well received. Like all the New Zealand people like did like a crazy dance. Yeah, it was really fun. We had a really great time, and we actually did it here on the island at Kapolei. We also did the same thing. We did a live performance while the film was projected on like three different screens.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And you've
cool.
done something on Maui too?
Yes, we filmed the whole thing on Maui.
But you did a live performance there too?
We haven't done a live performance on Maui yet, so.
And how would somebody find out about the film? Do you have like a website or?
We just go on HIF, thehif.com.
Hawaiian International yes. Film Festival.
Hawaiian International Film Festival.
And then
Festival.
You search for what?
Kai Halea, okay. Sea of Memories.
Name once more.
Trisha Axelrod.
Trisha, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful.
Thank you so much.
At the Red Carpet Gala, we also met up with Richard Hamasaki and Jody Stillwater, independent producers, directors, and filmmakers. Join us as they share fascinating insights about their jointly produced film, Manifesto for Concrete Poetry.
My name is Richard Hamasaki, independent filmmaker, poet, producer.
My name is Jody Stillwater. I am also an independent filmmaker, producer, director, cinematographer, sound mixer.
And how did you guys connect?
Well, okay, so we met
2022 after Po'ele Vai. They wanted to buy me a beer and talk story. Then they said, well, we'd like to collaborate with you. That's the other director, Sebastian Galasso.
You guys have a film here in the film festival, right?
Indeed, yeah. We have a film called Manifesto for Concrete Poetry.
By Wayne Kamuali Westlake.
1979.
Wow. Time journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Give us a word picture of what the film is, how it works.
It's based on a three-page poem that I published in a literary magazine in 79. This curator for the Triennial 2022, Broderick, decided to display it as a three-page vinyl wall display. And so after he did it in 22, I thought, why not make a film from it? So when they asked to collaborate, I said, how about if we work on Manifesto for Concrete Poetry by Westlake?
How did you couch it in a visual format?
We had different approaches. We started out with some footage of the poems that Richard shot underwater. And then we ended up, like, because the poem is about a lot of things, but first and foremost for me, the thing that drew me to it was its use of molecularizing and granulating language, deconstructing, reapproaching language outside of colonialism and in combatants with colonialism in the context of Hawaiian culture. What drew me to that particularly was, as a filmmaker, that's how I tend to approach films. And so it was a great opportunity to both work with someone that I really admire and a work that is really powerful, and to take that and work with imagery that would then recapitulate that language into in filmmaking. So,
is there an abstractness to the graphic images in the film?
There is indeed. It actually started, so with some footage of the poem shot underwater, we had brought in a lot of AI footage and animation. That ended up being kind of repetitive in certain ways, so we ended up not scrapping it, but making it not a feature, more of a
interlude or
texture. And so then what we did was we are working with Sebastian Galasso, who is an incredible movement performer, incredible actor, and what we did was he broke his movements down, and we reshot this live. He broke his movements down into a way of approaching the elements and finding water with the body. And so we took that language of the body, folded it in with the language of the AI, folded that in with the language of the actual poem itself shot underwater in the context of Hawaii, and turned that into something entirely new.
Do you have like a YouTube or something, a teaser where somebody could go and see what you did?
Yeah, we do. On Instagram, you can find the teaser at Rihama on Instagram, or at Jody Stillwater, at Sebastian Galasso, or at Yanasa Creative. It's attached to all three of those, and you'll be able to see the teaser.
Very cool. And how did the film do here at the festival?
It screened with a block called Manifesting Mana. And we were told that it screened in 4 theaters simultaneously.
Wow.
So there was an overflow crowd.
That's really cool.
We worked really hard on the soundtrack. So I laid down the initial soundtrack with poetry, and I asked 2 poets from Hawaii, Jocelyn Kamealani Ng and Anjoli Roy, and recorded it, and Jody stepped on it, doing some processing. My son actually composed the outro with the credits.
Kai Hamasaki.
What type of instrument in the music?
Keyboards. We work on soundscapes. So the film is like a soundscape with music. I found it to be very interesting because we interwove the spoken word with the soundtrack, very much cognizant of how we wanted it to sound in a theater should it get into the various festivals. So right now it's playing at HIFF, it's going to be at Kapolei next week, it's going to play on Kauai in November and in the Palace Theater in Hilo, and it's also going to screen at the Michaud Film Festival in LA.
So it really takes a grip on the poetry and really puts it in on the audience's eardrum and tongue.
That's so cool, because typically we don't have the luxury of hearing the voice of the poet. Think about it. You know, in all the poems you read, how often have you heard the author reading the poetry?
It's a wonderful opportunity, I think. Mm-hmm. And something else that another great opportunity is that we're developing it into a live movement piece as well. So you'll be able to see and experience bodies interpreting it with really talented dancers. Peiling Kao, from a professor of dance at University of Hawaii at Manoa.
We'll be screening it at the Crocker Museum in Sacramento.
When is that?
In June of 2025. We're going to perform initially in a new kind of way, and then we're going to have a screening with a Q&A, and then we're going to do kind of a TED Talk thing where we're going to rewind it and then talk about our collaborations. Because we spent over a year on a 6.5-minute film.
Wow.
And it took a lot of negotiation, a lot of discussion, compromise, critiques, but in a really positive, constructive way. We rarely Zoomed, if at all. It was all by phone on speaker. And so that's how we talked it out. We sent clips. We sent stems of recordings back and forth. We really spent a long time
on
it.
For
6.5 minutes, right.
Richard, would you feel comfortable talking about the origins of the poem?
Oh, yeah. My good friend that I met in 1974, Wayne Cumwell E. Westlake, was already a dedicated poet at 5 years my senior. Met him when I was 22. He was 27. And he passed away in 1984. And it was heartbreaking. I was publishing a literary magazine. We just had to stop. Many years later, his former partner sent us a box full of his manuscripts, mostly unpublished. UH Press wanted to publish it, but they wanted $2,500 for them to publish a native Hawaiian poet, and I was furious.
That's crazy.
So I asked so many people to contribute. We had a fundraiser, silent auction. We grossed 10 grand in a club in Chinatown.
I love it.
And so we were able to pay out the expenses off, and we were able to, on top of getting the book published for $2,500, we funded two poetry books by Kanaka Oʻiwi poets through Oʻiwi Press, and then we also published another book. We donated all that money for them to publish it.
That's so cool.
Yeah, by Jill Yamasawa.
What is your interpretation of the meaning of the poem?
You know, there are so many layers. Westlake brought me, for my sixth issue, brought me a manuscript, and I looked at it and said, Wayne, no, please give me something heavier. I want something really crazy. So I would say maybe a week or so later, he showed up with Manifesto, and I looked at it, and I said, oh my goodness, this is awesome. We also published several of his concrete poems that were featured at the Hawaii Triennial 22 at the Hawaii State Art Museum, now known as Capitol Modern. So he was my mentor. He inspired me. He was so much better than what I could imagine myself as a poet, aspiring poet at the time. And I've done everything I could to help promote his name so it lives in perpetuity here in Hawaii and the rest of the world.
It's truly an honor to help perpetuate that legacy. What is a concrete poem? What is concrete poetry?
Yeah.
Concrete poetry is a movement that began decades ago. It was in resistance to the staid kind of status quo mentality of traditional poetry. So the idea is to turn a word or a letter into a visualized concept or an object. Instead of just being like, when winds bend the tips of branches. So you could take the word like huli, which means to overturn, overthrow, turn over, change. And you could turn the word huli upside down, H-U-L-I, upside down, and create a concrete poem. That's one example. But it is an international movement that is still ongoing today. So concrete poetry is something that anybody could do, and it's but really fun.
Implicit from my naivete perspective is that it implies that it begs as poetry to be an oral delivered poem.
Mm.
Not just read.
Well,
you're missing a whole dynamic of you as a poet, of what you're trying to share without
reading. It's also visual. You're turning a poem or a word or a letter or a series of letters, blocks of letters, into a piece of art, right? So it's something that you can slap on the wall, something.
But you're supercharging it by you doing a delivery.
And also, I think it leads into a stage of where by no means am I any kind of expert on Hawaiian cinema, but from what I've experienced in the last few years of Hawaiian cinema at HIF, Hawaii International, is that we're watching an emergence of a reconstruction of filmmaking, a reconstruction of visual language. And I think this film, I see it to be a very much a part of that movement in a very, like, both conceptual, very, like, primal, very, like, personal way, as well as, in a way, abstract, too. So I feel like it provides a lot for the Hawaiian film community, because what we're seeing in the Hawaiian film community is an emergence of really strong young directors that are creating really an amazing narrative, amazing documentary, amazing experimental films, and that are looking to progress What is the language? How do we convey the message of the current state of the collision between indigeneity and coloniality in Hawaii, and then how do we do that with film? And so what we're seeing here is a lot of filmmakers becoming, the language is becoming more mature, the technical skills are growing exponentially. We hope to do is to be a part of that, to help both grow technically, on the tongue, in the heart, in the water, all of those things in such a way where...
On your guys' horizon, what are you visualizing, fantasizing?
Well, we just recorded Sebastian Galasso in my little mini studio, and I have a poem called Love Song for the Pristine Sea. We're discovering his skills as an orator and as a spoken word artist. And so hopefully we'll be working on another film, whether it's experimental or whatever. You know, the word experimental could be a narrowing of conceptualization, you know. So we want to make independent films. Ultimately, my dream is to make a feature film here. And we have a lot of ideas that we're bouncing around, including stories written by Kanaka Oyivi, Native Hawaiian writers, one of whom I know very well, was a former student of mine who's a full-time teacher at the School for Native Hawaiians called Kamehameha Schools at the Kapa'alama campus. And I just got permission to work.
Are you teaching there?
I taught there for 28 years. Oh. And my friend Michael Puleloa, who's a great short story writer, is also an English teacher there. But he was my student when I was in my first year teaching there in 1987. So it's a long throw, you know, but some of my best friends are my former students.
Keepers, we call them.
Right, keepers.
Some you
definitely.
Keep.
They're beautiful. They're beautiful human beings. Yeah. Justin Achong, the filmmaker, too, was one of my former students.
Oh, cool.
So it's multi-generational, too, in regard to the collaborations that we're making.
To learn more about your world.
My name is Jody Stillwater. I'm a filmmaker out of Oakland, California. You can find me on Instagram at Jody Stillwater and at Yanasa Creative, which is a company that I have with Sebastian Galasso, and the company is called Yanasa Creative Group.
My name is Richard Hamasaki. I'm a poet, independent filmmaker, producer, and I'm a collaborator, a creative collaborator. And, you know, this, before you make a film, back in the day, I made a 16-millimeter film on the International Three Ring Circus, focused on the prop crew after we did five tours in five cities in Japan. But that 16-millimeter killed me in terms of expense. So now we can digitize our work. And man, I'm telling you, it is viable now. So
thank you guys so much.
An intriguing aspect of both Kahelia and Manifesto for Concrete Poetry is that both movies artfully meld video with live performance. We were also fascinated by LA-based film producer and women empowerment leader Luna Zhang. She embodies a transparent passion and enthusiasm for creating life-changing documentaries. Ms. Zhang's slate of films, television series, documentaries, and animated features reflect her passion for meaningful storytelling, women empowerment, Asian and minority representation, and social consciousness. Ms. Zhang was honored to be a part of the Indigenous Shorts program, and she says it's one of the best programs, well curated, with Indigenous cultures and stories focused not only on North America, but globally. Come along and join the conversation with Ms. Luna Zhang.
Hi, everyone, and my name is Luna Zhang. I am a film financier and a producer supporting Women Empowerment Project and Spoken for Minorities. Nice to meet you all here.
Talk to us about the film and what it's like and what you're trying to communicate.
So the film we have a screening at Hawaii International Film Festival is called Not Afraid. It's a story behind MMIW, meaning Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. So we have this narrative short films talking about this subject. The fact is, just in 2016, there are more than 5,700 Indigenous women gone missing at their native reservations in North America.
Just North America?
It's just in North America, and just in year of 2016. Who is interested in this subject can just type in MMIW. MIW and get all more information. So the stand people might have seen there is a right covering the mouth. So that's the signature showing the sisters, their voice are not getting heard. And also the media and the law enforcement, the matter hasn't been addressed. So this is a very serious situation, and we would like more and more people raise the awareness towards it.
Real fascinating how it just does not get the press. It does not. It's like this lesser human being. You know, I spent time in South Dakota on the Rosebud Reservation.
Exactly.
And talked to the women there, and it's just sober. Not even murders, but rape and being beaten and abused. And
exactly.
And a huge disconnect. On
exactly. So it's actually from the statistics, murdered indigenous women is number three reason for the deaths causing to indigenous women. And also it's as young as under 1 year old and as old as 83 years old.
Wow.
Every time when I talk about it, I get emotional. Yeah. Just because I'm very grateful for the team to bring me on board to exact producing this project, support them with financial support. Really, as you said, media been covering that. Before this project, I really haven't heard many situations like that.
Yeah, and that's exactly the point.
Exactly.
They don't make the press.
For sure, yeah. Yes.
And so for you, it really was not an optional decision for you. I mean, it was a no-brainer, right?
It's no-brainer, obligation, whatever you call it. Just I got drawn into this project the moment when the team approached me.
How did they discover you? How did they reach out to you?
So I had a talk as a guest speaker to Alliances of Women Directors, and the director of Not Afraid, Michaela Bruce, happened to be one of the participants to that talk, and that's how we got connected. And also another executive producer, Jen Buckley, she is also a Native American herself, living in the state of Montana.
Where do you live? Where are you based?
I'm based in Los Angeles.
Is that where you grew up?
I actually grew up in China. I was born and raised in Beijing.
Oh, wow.
But I've been living in Los Angeles for almost 20 years.
Uh-huh.
It's my home
so
now.
Definitely home. Yeah.
Yes.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything you want to add? Like, do you have a website? Where would you want to direct people to learn more about your projects and what you do?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much again for, you know, interviewing us and get our voice heard. So the audience, if they are interested in this subject, go. So you can Google MMIW or go to nativehope.org. You will see a lot of information towards to this matters, and there are a lot of nonprofit organizations also talking about indigenous men, women, everyone. It's a great matter to raise social consciousness about.
Your name again?
Luna Zhang. Thank you so much. Nice meeting you all.
Yeah, what a pleasure.
Xie xie. Thank you. The pleasure is mine.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's really cool. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Waikiki.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Being there matters. And your United States Navy protects and defends America on the world's oceans. Around the globe, around the clock, Navy ships, submarines, aircraft, and most importantly, tens of thousands of America's finest young men and women are ready to defend America when piracy threatens global commerce, when disaster strikes, or when called upon by the Commander-in-Chief. Your Navy is there. When it comes to protecting and defending America, being there matters. And America's Navy is already there.